happy Father's Day to all of you out there, all you dads, you grandfathers, all those potential paternity test recipients getting the shock of your life. Welcome to the Between Two Wheels podcast, a podcast covering bike racing. This is episode 130. On today's show, we're going to cover the Dauphiné. Another Dutchman takes the stage victory, and we get a two-time winner of the Dauphiné. Stage 8, route results, profile, TJ surprises, Fugle sings, shines. Ineos ramps up its prominence without Froome. We skip to a day without Chris Froome's injury report. It's a week of bad weather, has really taken its toll. Several high-profile riders abandoning the race even before, some skipping out. The Tour de Suisse showcases a well-worn veteran as its winner. Some news from the world of cycling. Some things that make you go, winners and losers. All right, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is Tyler Yonke, Between Two Wheels podcast, episode 130. We're hitting it hard today. We're going to just come right out, finish this week off. It's been a solid week of work for you guys, for me, and it's been somewhat enjoying. But just wanted to take some time right now, make some comments on the show. If you're on YouTube, subscribe, hit the subscribe button. It helps us out. Any of the comments helps us get the show trending more. If you're on any of the subscription platforms for the podcast, go ahead and subscribe there as well. Make some comments, rate us, review us. All right, to the show. Froome watch day 5. Well, actually, we said we weren't going to do a Froome watch, right? But we're going to do a little. Look, Froome has all his broken bones. He's recovering. However, just like Froome, Phil Guymon, I've heard now that he's had a crash as well. Evidently, he was on the Velodrome. It looks pretty bad, just from everything I've seen. Not quite as bad as Froome's punctured lung. Some issues with that. The word is he's crashed at the Velodrome. I've almost done that before. You know, you don't realize you have a fixed gear and you try to coast and you almost crash, or maybe that was it. I don't know what the details are. I haven't actually looked into it too much. I did see that he was complaining that he wasn't getting the publicity that he should be getting. And he thinks it's because he cussed out a bunch of media for when they were using his book as clickbait. Was that when you were saying Cancellara was Luigi, even though you knew Luigi was Decker a year before? Was it the clickbait that you made up the story about Andy Schleck at the Tour of Utah? Was that the look? No one, you got a lot of publicity out of the Cancellara thing. You went and did a hill climb thing with him. Kudos to you. I'm sorry you're injured. You're laid up in bed. I hope you get well. But no one knows clickbait better than Phil. And Phil, we wish you the best. All right, stage 7 of the Dauphiné. Race is from Cluses to Champré, 114 kilometers. The start at Cluses is well known for its clock-making industry. 1720, Claude-Joseph Balladoud introduced clock-making in the Arve Valley, previously a farming community. Soon, family-owned workshops and workrooms and cottage industry emerged, supplying the main clock-making centers of Geneva. In 1848, the École Royale de Horlogerie, Royal School of Clockmaking, was created. A precision clock manufacturing in the Valley soon became a mainstay of the town. Twin cities for this town, one of them, Beaverton, Oregon, United States. Been there myself. It's home to the Oregon State Beavers, I believe. Could be wrong. But anyway, finishes in Champré. It's a municipality. Actually, it's in Switzerland. Winter sports, obviously skiing, summer sports. Well, the Dauphiné, let's get right to it. The route, it's kind of a horseshoe-like with the closed end at the top, going from the bottom left to heading up north, then heading a little east, and then coming back around. The profile, multiple climbs, only 113.5 kilometers, a 3, a 2, a 3, a 1, a 3, a 1, a 3 category climb. So it's brutal, and it was today, depending on the weather. The weather's been really bad in the Tour and the Dauphiné in France. And look, the riders, it's taken its toll. And just a reminder of who, first of all, it has a Cat 1 climb about 10K from the finish. It has a little bit of a downhill, another Cat 3 climb up, a little down, a little pitch up to the finish. And so we're going to see a breakaway today. Most likely you're going to see a breakaway. And that's exactly what we ended up seeing. Okay, let's get right, first of all, to what the stage 7 GC picture looked like. It was Fuglsang, as we said, in first place. Yates coming in second, 8 seconds back. Van Garderen only 20 seconds back. And with that, we have a real close battle for third and fourth with Emmanuel Bachmann. And look, there were some chances of getting some actual potential conflicts there. Some guys moving up and down. You had maybe Yates would be able to take the lead. Well, what ended up coming up was Sick Bay. There's a bunch of riders that came out, non-starters for the day. We had Darwin Adepuma, Stefan Rossetti of Cofidis, Michael Woods. He hadn't missed a start since 2016. His teammate Alberto Bettiol also wasn't a starter. Pierre Roland, Cyril Gauthier of Vital Concepts, Thomas Degan of Wanty Group Gobert, and Casper Pedersen of the Sunweb team. Other good riders dropping out during the race. Stephen Kruijswijk, who had been up there pretty close to the top. Matter of fact, let's just see where exactly he was. Kruijswijk was 9th place, minute 20. He'd been looking fairly good. He drops out of the top 10. Everyone, if you can start and race, you're going to be able to move up a spot. He DNF'd on the day. So did Simon Clark. The big one that pulled out, though, was Adam Yates. 2nd place, only by 8 seconds. He ends up pulling out of the race. Evidently, he had been suffering a fever. I don't know what Kruijswijk's issue was, but he had had some problems. Mike Woods said he had been having a rough night. He said he slept like crap, and that was more than just a description of his sleeping. So obviously, he probably had a stomach virus of some sort. So look, they're blaming, and I had mentioned this earlier, you get a bunch of crap thrown up on the road. You know, you're out there in the farmlands. Who knows what's happening? I mean, that water is all in your mouth. You're ingesting stuff. These guys are super fit. They're on the edge. Their immune system anyway, when you're like that, I have no body fat. So they're really susceptible to some of the issues that can happen around there like that. And, you know, that's exactly, I imagine, why you're seeing a bunch of them getting pulled out and not, you know, especially guys, Yates, 2nd place. You wouldn't expect him to be pulling out of the race, but obviously maybe that's why you saw some suffering from both him. I don't know if Richie Porte has been suffering from something as well, because he's had kind of a tough time. Anyway, let's get to the race recap. Speaking of crap, 12-man break gets up the road. Dylan Van Baarle of Ineos, Jack Haig, Julian Alaphilippe, Felix Gauss-Chartner. Those are kind of your main guys here. Carlos Verona, Sebastian Reichenbach, Sepp Kuss, the American from Jumbo Visma, Julian Bernard, Trek Segafredo, Carl Hagen of Lotto Soudal. He ends up staying up near the end there. Herman Pernsteiner, Alessandro Di Marchi, and Warren Barguil. So with that, it starts to peel itself down. About the last 20K or so, you're having Van Baarle, Jack Haig still in there. You have Gauss-Chartner, Sepp Kuss. I think Alaphilippe was still mixed in that. Hagen was still in there. But in the last 15K, you start to see a little bit of mixing. It pairs itself down to about 4 of those guys, of Haig, Van Baarle, Sepp Kuss, Hagen. You got Alaphilippe just a little bit behind. Sepp Kuss and Hagen get dropped. Now it's just Van Baarle and Haig up the road. And those two look pretty strong. Both big riders as far as stature goes. And they're going up the climb. Look, it's Cat 1, and then you're ending on a 3 that goes up there. So they're big ringing this thing, and they're not going to be coming back. They have a sizable lead, but they're not a threat to the overall. Back in the overall, Astana is on the front looking very solid. I didn't see them having any trouble because Lutsenko is up there for Fuglsang, and Fuglsang just looked like he was having no trouble at all. Very, very stoic, smooth, and not a problem at all. Who did have some trouble? He had guys getting some guys getting spit out. One of those was Richie Porte, just having trouble hanging on. Sepp Kuss comes back. He ends up staying with the front group. And in the end, you have a bit of a sprint. Van Baarle ends up hitting it a little early, and it's a little twisty section coming through there, and he beats Jack Haig. Same time for those guys. Mitchelton Scott Ryder in 2nd place. Dylan Van Baarle of Ineos, a Dutch rider, in 1st place. Carl Hagen comes in 2nd place, 50 seconds back. Warren Barguil comes in 4th, a minute 12. Sepp Kuss ends up hanging in with him, with Reichenbach, Alaphilippe. So he's up with that group. And then you've got Lutsenko a little bit off there, and a bunch of big group coming in up to 18, TJ Van Garden holds on there. Gorka Zagiri, Richie Port, they're another 5-7 seconds back with Magnus Cort Nielsen. So Richie Port loses a little bit of time in the day, can't quite hold on the last little bit. And so you have the overall Fuglsang holds on. You know, 2 years ago, he came on the last day, put in a good attack and was able to get away and won the race overall. This time he just was able to hold on and didn't have, like I said, his biggest competition, as we talked about yesterday, was Yates, who might have had an opportunity. There's no way TJ is going to get away from him, especially on climbing like this. TJ did be able to hold on for second place in 20th. Emmanuel Bachmann comes in second place, 1 second behind that for 21. Wout Poels in third at 28. Thibaut Pinot, 33 seconds for fifth. Dylan Tunes drops down to sixth, but gets a 1:11 time. And pretty well for him. So who else did we have in the top there? Yeah, Dan Martin, Nairo Quintana, minute 21:24. Roman Bardet, minute 38. Warren Barguil, 5:28. That's when you start to see him dropping down to 13th place. Guillaume Martin dropped down to, he had a rough day, dropping down to 17th place. So look, Fuglsang, is he have a chance for the tour? Who's won the Dauphiné before that is... probably not a Grand Tour winner, Andrew Talansky. You've had Fuglsang won it 2 years ago. He hasn't really been able to come through. So a 7-day stage race is not going to look. That's where you want to see the main riders. They need to be in contention. They need to be in the top 10. They need to be within a minute and a half for some of these guys, depending on the time trial, of course, to be able to show that they can do something for the Tour de France. But you're not going to have, just because you won doesn't mean you're going to, you know, let's say Alaphilippe would won this. Is he going to be challenging for the tour? Probably not. But, you know, his chance could be coming up. Fuglsang, he has been developing into a rider that should be able to be strong for a 3-week race. He's been stellar on this early season to the point where he should be considered, but you don't know how much of that is going to affect him. Usually you don't see the Grand Tour riders so strong in the early season classics. So I don't know how much of that is going to take its toll on him, but anyway, it's pretty impressive getting out there and being able to at least dominate in the way he did this year. So the other competition, the sprint competition, was won by Wout Van Aert. Very impressive for him. As we said, he had won a stage. He got out in he had the yellow jersey for a while. He won two stages, actually, the time trial and the sprint. So that was impressive. On the youth side, Bjørg Lambrek, Lotto Soudal, he came in first on that. Let's see where he was overall. Bjørg Lambrek was even in the top. He was 12th place at 3:17 down. So that gives you some perspective as far as the youth jersey goes. So Lambrek, 12th place, but first place in the young riders jersey, second and third. Nielsen Palace in second, 11:42 behind him. Sepkus, 16:02. So that wasn't really a close competition, but it's really good to see those two Americans come to the fore there, because behind them was Nils Pollitt, Gianni Moscon. Of course, there's different power structures to what these guys are doing, but Nielsen Palace and Sepkus, they need to be helping in the mountains in a race like this. They should be up there, and the more that they progress along in their career, the more that they should be competing at the top for the young rider, just even riding in support. King of the Mountains was won by Julian Alaphilippe. Team classification was won by Team Astana. Winners on the day, Team Ineos, Warren Van Boro, getting second straight consecutive win for the team. That's two Belgians as well. That's two for the Dutch. The Belgians won three stages in this tour. The Norwegian won one with Bosenhagen. Irish won one with Sam Bennett. French won one with Alaphilippe. And then you had two for the Dutch yesterday, Wout Poels, and today Dylan Van Baarle. Like I mentioned, the loser on the day was probably Guillaume Martin. I don't want to necessarily say Port kind of picked him yesterday. Port's been having a tough time. And we'll kind of talk about him and his tour coming up here in a little bit with some news that came out from Trek Segafredo. But for a guy that won last year at the Tour Switzerland, you know, similar race that we have here, coming into the tour, it's him getting, you know, outside the top 10. Well, actually, what was his spot here? He was 12th place. A minute 38 back, and he was struggling on a Cat 3 finish today. That's not something you're expected to see. So, rough going for him. Okay. Other news around the world of cycling. We had the Tour de Suisse stage two. So as the White Dauphine winds down, we have the Tour de Suisse kind of ramping up. Interesting that both of them are in Switzerland today. But you have the defending Tour de France champion and Geraint Thomas kind of be able to stake his claim. We mentioned this before, but everybody is curious to see how it's going to go. It's not going to happen today. He wasn't in the top for the time trial yesterday. It was run by Rohan Dennis. So today we had, once again, we'll just rattle off the GC real quick. Rohan Dennis, Magic Bodnar, Michael Matthews, Soren Krog Anderson, and Casper Asgreen and Lawson Craddock down to sixth place there. Peter Sagan in seventh. So what was today's race like? Well, today it was a 13-so-mile circuit. They did a few times. Today's stage around Bern. It's a road race, obviously, and they have six category climbs, two climbs repeated three times. So these were Cat 2s. And what are the highlights? Well, you had four riders that got in the break early today. They were Guillaume van Kruisbeek of CCC, Gavin Mannion of the UHC Rally Cycling Team, Claudio Imhoff of Switzerland, and it must be for the Swiss team, and then Fabien Grillier of the Total Direct Energy. The break got about 4 minutes. Imhoff ends up going ahead of the group. The others come back. Mannion's one of the last ones, but it's about 75K to go. Imhoff is still out alone. He gets about 2.5 minutes. At one point, he has to do a bike change, drops the lead down to about 1.5 minutes. Then he gets caught. I think it's about 15 or 38K to go. They reel him in. There's a few other breaks up the road. What happens is Luis Leon Sanchez of Astana attacks about 11K to go, quickly gets about a 15, 20 second, 30 second gap, and he holds it. He holds all the way to the line. The team's Bora Hansgrohe, Mitchelton Scott, Dequan Quickstep, CCC, these other teams didn't do the chasing that they needed to bring him back, and they all kind of suffered for it. Peter Sagan ends up in second place, winning the field sprint over Matteo Trentin, and Casper Asgreen, Ben Evermont, Michael Matthews, Omar Fraley, and on down. There was trouble today for McNulty of the UHC Rally team, the whole team. In fact, he was the best place at 5:21 back. But you know, this team's out there learning. I don't want to give the whole team a bum rap. I mean, Mannion was in the break for most of the day, and so he does deserve some credit, and it's not, you know, you're not going to see him once. Like, matter of fact, Imhoff, he came back to the field, and when he came to the field, he just got spit right out the back. So it's a tough day. Stage three tomorrow, it looks like it's going to be one for the sprinters. There's a few little, there's a cat three, and then it's just descending flat for the last, I want to say 40K or so. So if that's not either a breakaway that sticks, it should be one for the overall. On the news front, Remco Evenepoel, he wins overall at the Blois Belgium Tour. 19 years old, he continued his winning form, and you know, he had won the race the other day, Saturday. Yesterday he was able to finish it up, but he was placed third yesterday. The other day he had a time the road race with Kampenaerts. He ended up getting the win. The next day they had a time trial. He ends up fourth in the time trial, about 4 seconds behind the winner, 1 second behind Kampenaerts. So he was still in the lead, and they had, you know, we mentioned it the other day, the race took place on some of the Liège course. They went over the La Redoute and the Roche-Faucons, both big features in the, like I said, Liège-Bastiège. He was able to hold on to that. Today, he ends up finishing up and takes the win. 19-year-old winning a World Tour race and then winning the world, I mean, you know, a stage, and then actually the overall. So congrats to him. The kid is 19 years old. I mean, give me a break. It's pretty impressive. OVO Energy Women's Tour finished up today. I haven't talked much about that. Their website's a little bit hard to actually navigate as well, but Lizzie Dieden ends up winning that in first place. Katarina Niewiadoma in second by, it looks like, 2 seconds. Amy Peters in third. And Christine Majerus and Demi Vollering in from fourth and fifth. The Baby Giro is happening. I don't know if you know about that. It's a race Joe Dombrowski's won previously. It's all for U23. I wasn't able to find much of anything. I found some pretty nice highlights. It was all in Italian. They didn't have any overlays of like who's winning or what. So I watched like three stages of highlights. you know, those kids really throw their bike around. It's different to see than the pros, because the young kids, man, they're just, they're a little bit more sketchy on the bike. And even though they're all U23s and some of these guys are really good pros, I didn't see any wrecks, but you just notice that the guy's sprinting, just the bike gets thrown around a little bit more. That's all I'm saying. Still very impressive. All right, we do have some viewer, listener mailbag. Look, one of the videos I posted out the show, and I did some like highlights from one of them. One of them was about Chris Froome. It's really getting tearing it up on YouTube for us. But some people give it the thumbs down, which is perfectly fine. I'm not telling you to go thumb, but it's just me talking about that Chris Froome got hurt, and I showed a wreck of our friend Scott Hooper. People didn't like that. Sorry, I didn't mean to offend. Anyway, let's talk about some of the comments we got here. Andy Hodgson, you know, I mentioned this one yesterday. He was saying that Froome during the 2011 Vuelta actually had the fastest time. He was the best rider and deserved to win. He did. So basically, I guess he's saying without the time bonus, Froome should have been part of the win. I guess he's part of the Froome resistance, that he should have been the winner on a long. Kobo was not the worthy champion, and now, you know, look, he's coming due. Jason Grafath mentioned, he said, hey, you mentioned Guymon. He crashed today on the track and is messed up. Not as much as Froome, but Guymon is pretty messed up. Stay careful out there. Right. Stay careful. That's exactly it. I haven't been on the bike for over a week. Kind of feeling it. A little antsy. I should be able to get back. Doctor says I can get back on there tomorrow. Cleared to go. And then, hey, looking to cut some weight and get fit. Grafath also said maybe Kobo was the most suspicious. But the top five, this is of the 2011 Vuelta, the top five, maybe top 10 in GC that year race are all suspicious. They should give the 2011 title to Horner instead. Why should we care about the Vuelta from 8 years ago? Well, I won't talk about the Horner thing, but you got a point. And maybe Horner needs to be worried. Someone was saying that. But why should we worry about the Vuelta from 8 years ago? Totally agree. I think something came up in 2015. This was just the report actually still had come out. So now it's finally being done. I'm not sure why they're still cracking down. So, I mean, there is a statute of limitations. It used to be about 8 years, I think. And Lance actually, I remember reading that he could have evoked that defense, originally, but he decided not to do it. So I think he invoked the, instead of the SOL, the statute of limitations. There's a joke here. I shit out of luck. Maybe I shouldn't go over that way neither. Point is, I don't know why they're still doing it. It seems like they should develop the technology to go forward and catch people that are actively racing. But the only thing it could possibly do is put a little bit of scare into some of these riders that possibly that they still have need to be worried about, you know, something doing now, maybe something, you know, come back later. The microdosing. The microdosing is one that's a pretty big deal right now that they're able to do and suspect that they're getting away with. Maybe that's something that they'll be able to detect in a few years and come back to it. So the only thing I could say is, why worry about now? Well, maybe if you're coming back at a later date, people will be scared and it'll keep them from doing it. John Simmons had mentioned Kellen Winslow signed up for the Ladoga road race the year he did it, but didn't show up. Sorry, maybe he had other things. He was trolling the beach and some other places on his bike looking for some... Okay, we'll just go on here. Some things that make you go, hmm. Things that make you go, hmm. Well, on today's one, no Tour de France for John Degenkolb. Trek Segafredo rider, actually the team has now decided that they're going to focus completely on Richie Port, so the German sprinter. He could be actually heading to Lotto Soudal, not for this year, but for next year. Caleb Ewing went there. You know, he had some conflict with Mitchelton Scott saying, oh, we're not taking him because, you know, he could have done, I think, three tours by now. But they weren't taking him because they're going to focus on Yates at the tour. Now it's kind of happened. Look, Degenkolb, I mean, he saved the race for Trek last year at the tour by winning stage nine at the ending up in Paris-Roubaix. It was a big deal. You know, he's come back from that wreck, the horrendous wreck that he had had with Chad Haga and the team training. And so it was really good to see him, and it was pretty emotional. But says, as it stands now, I will not be riding the Tour de France this year, he reported. You know, leaving Degenkolb, who's also won Milan San Remo, 10 stages at the Vuelta and at home for July. And, you know, that shows their seriousness of focusing just on Richie Port for GC ambitions this year. I don't know. Maybe they don't have any other options. Malcolm Olimer could probably do just as well as Richie Porte the way he seems to be going this year. But we will see. All right, people, that ends our week-long podcast marathon. Tune into us next time. This has been episode 130. As always, like I said, subscribe. Join us on our YouTube page. That's where we're gonna put bike racing stuff on there. We have bike videos from the camera actually on our bike, doing some of those quick ones, highlights of the show, everything we can. Check us out. Subscribe there as well. Share the show if you want. Make some comments. We'll definitely read your mail. And join us next week for another exciting episode of the Between Two Wheels podcast. And as Jason Grafath said, stay careful out there.